cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
We've got another angle on today's labor report. And, you know, what we saw, of course, you know, the numbers coming in hotter than expected, revisions higher, wages. We're seeing that spike in wages continuing, which we know plays out into overall inflation in the economy. Our next guest has some thoughts on why inflation is tougher, actually, on working women. So great to have back with us Kautika Roy. She's CEO at Pipeline. They use AI to work with companies on gender biases, so they pull in all the data. And she joins us on the phone from Paris. Kautika, good to be talking with you again. Tell us a little bit about your perspective on what's going on in the labor market, especially when it comes to women.
Yeah, Carol, thank you. It's great to be here. You know, what we saw in today's jobs report is that across all cohorts of women, they've actually lost jobs. And since the beginning of the pandemic, we actually have 1.8 million women missing from the labor force. And if we brought those 1.8 million women back, we could actually close the gap of workers by almost a quarter. And so we could actually make our jobs market a little less hot.
Kautika, to be fair, I do think we're all trying to figure out why so many women and men are staying away from the labor force. We talk about the available labor pool, right? This is so participation. You know, it's been down coming off of the pandemic. What are the reasons that women in particular are not coming back?
Yeah, we have a couple of reasons. You know, one is, certainly childcare has been talked about, and that is part of the solution, but it's not the only solution. There are two pieces. One is actually equity in the labor force, and so this goes beyond pay, but actually ensuring that they have equity of opportunity. Just to give you one example, women are 58% of college graduates, 47% of the labor force, and yet only 8% of Fortune 500 CEOs. That's one. The other piece is skilling. So we actually leaped forward 5 years in terms of digital acceleration during the pandemic. So the jobs that existed at the beginning of the pandemic, don't necessarily exist right now. So we've got a mismatch between skills that companies need and the actual available workers. And so if we skilled folks and ensured equitable skilling, that is equitable access to skilling, but also the ability to apply those skills, we could close that gap and close it quickly.
Hey, Kautika, I guess my question would be, what would you recommend to policymakers, given the data that you have and what you know? Like, how do we fix this from a policy perspective?
Well, you know, certainly the pay transparency laws that have both gone into effect and are slated to go into effect on the first of the year are a step in the right direction.
Okay, well, let's break down what we're talking about here, because not everyone knows what those mean. Sure. You're talking about, you know, recently in New York City, about a month ago, jobs that were posted for certain companies had to include some sort of pay range. Is that what you're referring to?
Exactly. So on job postings, Colorado was the first state to do that, and then New York City is the second area to do that. Then we've got three more states that will go live with that on January 1st. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. And so it's a step in the right direction in terms of putting guardrails up. But what we really need from policymakers is true equal pay. And we don't have that in the United States. That is actually ensuring that we're paying people equitably and that companies are proving that they're paying people equitably. And that's not only an issue of fairness, it's actually an issue of economic growth. Because if we close the gender pay gap in the United States, we could close the gender pay. We could add $512 billion to the U.S. economy, and every American taxpayer subsidizes the pay gap because women, in particular, are more likely to rely on social welfare programs.
Katica, one thing I don't kind of get, and if we're relying on policymakers, it may take a little while to get that parity, right? I feel like we've been waiting for a long time already. So, you know, that to me continues to be a slow process. But what about the private sector? And I'm thinking about corporations. We see ESG policies being put out in a big way, DEI policies being put out in a big way. So what's the onus actually on the private sector and companies to really move more aggressively on parity? You work with companies, you look at their data points. What's the conversations that you're having as to why, or what you're hearing as to why companies aren't being kind of better when it comes to making sure there's parity, especially on pay and opportunity for men and women?
Yeah, it's a great question. The issue isn't awareness, it's execution. So about 96% of companies put equity in their top priorities. The issue is that only 22% of employees regularly see it shared and measured. So it's really the difference between employer branding and the employee experience. And what Pipeline, the company that I run, is designed to do is to actually close that gap, which is to get ahead of the decisions that companies are making
No, I listen to what you say, Katica. Like this high idea of like they have the awareness. That's pretty high, but it's the execution. And I know this is what you help companies do. But why aren't they executing? If they see the data, they understand. Just got about 30 seconds left here. Why aren't they doing it?
I think in the past, they haven't had the tools and the systems to actually do that. And now they do with companies like Pipeline. And we actually now, just in the last month, expanded our offerings to companies that have 200 or more employees, as well as they can get a free equity baseline report. So there's not even a cost to it right now.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Katica, always good to catch up with you. Katica Roy, she is Chief Executive Officer, founder of Pipeline, joining us on the phone from Paris.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Hurd, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.